I love this story in the Bible. I think everybody loves it. Aspiring yogi that I am, I must say I'm still hooked on that, and they all lived happily ever after. Yesterday when I was reading this, it reminded me of something that happened here. A number of years ago now, there was a woman who used to sing a great deal in the church, and she was actually very talented, but she had great stage fright. And I watched her for a long time get up, and I always felt that if she could let go of any of her fear, that she would be able to really convey the deepest meaning of this music that we're hearing this morning and that we always hear to all of us. So one day as we were lined up in the back there, as we often do before we're coming out to sing as a choir, I just really, without much thought, it must have been an inspiration, I took her aside and I said to her, you know, if when you stand up there tonight, you imagine that you are singing to someone, you decide who that is, who loves you unconditionally, someone who you know for sure will hear your music as being perfect and beautiful, that there is not a thought in your mind that it would be other. It could be that beautiful picture of Master and Swamiji in the back of our church. It could be some other form of God. It could be your father, who I knew had died many years ago, or your husband. Sing to that person and know that you cannot get it wrong. And she came in here that night and she sang so beautifully. Her husband, who was in the audience, just had tears streaming down his face. And it was such a beautiful lesson in what happens for all of us in those moments when we can remember or know in this life, perhaps, that there is unconditional love waiting for us somewhere, that we blossom, that we can only then become all of who it is we were meant to be, that we can deliver our song by living in that acceptance. This story of the prodigal son, which is of course told over and over, and we just heard the short version of it today, so I actually would like to tell a longer version of the story, but keep bringing us back to the spiritual lessons that are so rich here in this story for us. It is a parable, of course, but what makes it so wonderful is that it's a parable not only filled with hope, it's a promise. This whole story is a promise. It's a reminder to us there is unconditional love for all of us, and that unconditional love is right there, only waiting for us to turn around and reclaim it, to live in it, that God has not left us, all of those aspects of God have not left us, but we, over and over, tend to leave God. We tend to leave that unconditional love, and then we get up here and we think, we have to sing well. We think people will be judging us. We're sure we'll miss a note. It won't sound as beautiful as everybody wanted it to sound. And perhaps even sometimes that happens. But it's because we've left, not because the love or the possibility of total love has gone anywhere. So here we hear a story of the son of a wealthy landowner, and he's one of two sons, and he approaches his father one day and he says, I don't really want to do this work that looks like it's laid out for me. I don't want to stay here where I am. I'd like you to give me my inheritance now. I'm going to cash in on whatever it is you have to give me, and I'm going to go off to some foreign land. And what does that foreign land mean? Of course, in the story, we're told that he squandered his inheritance by living a loose life. We're never quite told what that means. But that foreign land, from a spiritual perspective, means anywhere we go that takes us away from our true nature. Every time we get tugged by the ego that tells us, which is, of course, its nature, the ego wants to go out, it wants to be pleased, it wants to look for things outside of us that are pleasurable. It also is the place in us that has us feel fear, that has us know greed, that has us in a place of delusion. This foreign land is, in essence, where the ego so naturally travels. And it's outside of our true nature. So the son takes his inheritance, and he goes out, and he basically squanders it. Just like we so often squander our spiritual inheritance. We are told over and over that everything we need is inside, that all we need to do is love God, that everything we're looking for in this foreign land already lives inside of us, but we keep forgetting that, and we squander that which is already ours. We give it away, and then we're left bereft. So what happens? Just as this son has spent all of his inheritance, exactly when it's all gone, of course, there's a famine. And he has no money and no way to make a living. That famine represents our lack of inner and spiritual nourishment. When we've squandered everything we've been given, we feel famished. We feel hungry for something, though we don't always put a name to it. Still, though repeatedly, we've lost everything we have, as we read in our festival every week. We keep going back out and trying to find what our soul is longing for in all of the ways that we can look for it. So what happens to the son? He finds a man who says to him, sure, come and work for me, and you can feed the pigs. You can feed the swine, he says. So this young man, who once had all of the riches that he could have wanted, is now left to feed the pigs in the midst of a famine, and he finds himself wishing that he could eat the pig's food because he's so hungry. But nobody offers him the pig's food. And it dawns on him in the midst of his hunger, on my father's land, the help that works for my father has all the bread that they want to eat. They're eating well, and I'm out here and I'm starving. So he decides in that moment that he will go back to his father and ask his father for a job. That's what he's going to do. So he begins right then his journey home. But he's already thinking, before he even gets anywhere near his father, I don't deserve anything. The only thing that I am worthy of right now is to work for my father. He knows nothing about forgiveness, nothing about acceptance. He has no idea of these things. It reminds me very much, someone once asked Yogananda, what do you think, what would you say is the most inspiring story in the autobiography of a yogi? It might have even been Swami Kriyananda, who founded Ananda, who asked that question. I don't remember. And he said, I think it's the quote from my teacher that said, vanished lives of all men, past lives of all men, are dark with many shames, meaning we've all traveled in these foreign lands. We've all left that which is inherently and rightfully ours. We've all done these things. We, sitting in this church, have almost all heard that saying that Yogananda says, where he said, whatever it is that you see anybody else doing in the world, no matter how egregious the crime, you've done it once before. You no longer are doing it because you've already done it. The vanished lives of all men are dark with many shames, Sri Yukteswar said. He said, human lives, until they are anchored in God, basically, nothing in life is for sure. Until the human being is anchored in God, nothing is for sure. And then the final line of that quote that says, but everything will improve going forward if you make spiritual effort now. He doesn't even use the word progress. He doesn't even put that on us, that we have to necessarily be making progress that we can see. He says, everything will improve if you make spiritual effort. And in essence, that's what's happening in this parable, allegorically, as this son decides that he's going to come home. This is the beginning of his spiritual effort. And as he's coming home, he's telling himself over and over that he's not worthy of his father's love anymore. And he's stuck with that because he's still living in his ego. This is a lesson that Swami Kriyananda has taught us over and over. Never say you failed. He says, say I haven't yet succeeded. But you have to believe. You have to have that moment of realization that you're seeking spiritual awareness before you can do that. So the son is still telling himself everything that he's not, a place that we don't want to go. We want to remember never to say that, not to be there. We're here trying. That's when we get into those negative places. That's when we do whatever we do. We start a chant. We pray. We meditate. We don't let that thought get a hold of us. And what happens to that son? Even when he is still far away, the story goes, his father sees him, and he runs to him, and he holds him, and he lays his head on his neck, and he kisses him. The father doesn't even wait for the son. The son wants to say to him, Father, I am unworthy of you. I have sinned against heaven and before you. But the father will have none of it. He doesn't see this son as sinning. He sees him as his son. He sees him as everything I am, you are too. Just the way God sees us. There's a beautiful story in the autobiography of a yogi in a chapter called The Sleepless Saint. And for many reasons, I just strongly encourage all of you to go back out and read this chapter. It is, of course, filled with wisdom, but it is filled with the best, with so much humor and the best use of the English language on the part of Yogananda, just every word so meaningful. But the story is that Yogananda, as a young man still, not long after meeting his guru, he goes in front of Sri Yukteswar and he says, Master, will you bless me to go to the Himalaya? He said, I want to be in continued silence so that I can experience ongoing divine communion. And Yogananda says after that, in the next line, he said, I actually uttered those words to this avatar that I was in front of. He's writing this book many years later, realizing his own folly. But he says, a feeble excuse, he says, I had only known him for 6 months. So he says to this great saint, bless me so that I can leave you and go to the Himalaya and find God. And Sri Yukteswar very calmly says, there are many men living in the Himalaya who know nothing of God perception. And Yogananda doesn't respond. So his next statement, Yukteswar's, to Yogananda is, maybe better you should seek this wisdom from a God-realized master than from an inert mountain. But still Yogananda doesn't get it. And he says once again, won't you bless me to go to the Himalaya? And then Yogananda says, Sri Yukteswar didn't respond to me, and I decided to interpret his silence as a consent. He said it was precarious, but a convenient interpretation. You see, it's even that part of his story is so heartwarming for us. Here is Paramahansa Yogananda. Granted, he's a younger man, but even he got confused. He's telling us this story so that we can not blame ourselves. See, this is what happens. Any little bit of ego, and he gets restless in the ashram. He forgets where he is, and he's going to travel to the Himalaya to live quietly and try and find God. He's looking for what he's looking for outside, and he shares this beautiful story with us. And then, of course, he takes off, and he takes off to meet the sleepless saint, Ram Gopal. What happens between them, which is a wonderful story, but is not as important here, other than the fact that Ram Gopal says to him at one point, little master, do you have a quiet room back in your guru's ashram? And he said, I do. And he says to him, that will be your cave. And he quotes basically what Yukteswar says. He said, here you are in these, I think even uses the word, inert stone. And of course then Yogananda gets it. So he blesses him and he goes back to the ashram. And as he walks into the ashram, he says, he very sheepishly looks at Yukteswar and he says, Master, I'm home. And what does Sri Yukteswar do? He says, great, let's go eat. That's what he says. Yogananda's waiting to be punished. And Sri Yukteswar says, let's go have a meal. I'm thrilled you're here. And Master says to him, aren't you angry with me? I walked away from all my chores. I can't even imagine what I left you with for days. Aren't you even a little angry? And Yukteswar says, of course not. He said, anger comes when you allow somebody else, when you have thwarted desires, he calls them, meaning that you've allowed your happiness, your contentment, your peace to rest in something or someone else. He says, I have no expectation of anyone else, so what could I have to be angry about? It's such a profound lesson in the fact that God doesn't judge us. That's what the son came home to find out. He kept interrupting his father. He kept wanting to say, wait a minute, let me tell you how awful I am. But not only will he not see, judge us, God does not see us as being awful. He sees us as a pure extension of himself, of his consciousness. He doesn't see our faults. He doesn't call them faults. These are our words in our contracted little state. What else can we think? We assume that everybody and everything, including our Father who art in heaven, is just like we are. But that consciousness has transcended the ego, and it's not looking to see what is wrong. It only sees itself, and it sees everything as perfect. That is the extraordinary promise, that all we need to do is turn around and look inside, make whatever effort we can, whatever it is, just affirming, I am Om, I am Om, that we live in this, our inner reality, not outside in duality. Whatever little effort we make, we come home into our Father's arms after he has run to greet us. And what does he do? He says, bring the best robe. And that best robe might be inner peace or deep contentment. Bring a beautiful ring. Let me give you some inspiration. Let me help you plug into the essence of all you are. Let's kill the fattened calf. Let me show you what the reality is here, that this soul's eternal reality is with God. God never went anywhere, and he will embrace us and lift us up. This is the promise of this parable. It's a beautiful story. It's an uplifting story. Even the older brother who wants to get a little angry, like the Martha and Mary story in the Bible. And the brother's saying, I can't believe you're doing this. I can't believe you're greeting him. He took everything you gave him and he left. And I've been here and I've been serving you. And his father just looks at him and he says, everything I have was always yours and it was always your brother's. I didn't go anywhere. I'm never going anywhere. I'm as much yours as I always was. Even in that way, whichever role we play, God is right there, wanting us to turn around and come home so that he can embrace us. St. Augustine had that beautiful, beautiful line where he said, Father, you have made us to love thee, and our hearts will be restless until they rest in thee. We are restless. We are all looking for what always was, is now, forever will be ours. If we just remember, every time that restlessness strikes, every time we go to walk into any of those foreign lands, no matter how enticing, no matter how seductive, no matter how well the ego's doing its job, grab any little string that you can, anything. Just remember, I am Om. I am Om, omnipresent, all-pervading. We are that. That is the promise. We are all prodigal sons, and we can all come home to our Father, to that love that's waiting for us at all times.